Hi friends, grab a seat, grab your wine. You are listening to the Close Friends podcast. This is where we record our IRL conversations as friends about surviving, thriving, and diving headfirst into life, trying to be adults, but also trying to have a fucking good time. This week, I am your host, Lucy, and I'm joined as ever by Tara.
Hello.
And Sarah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Sarah, do you have our close friend of the week this week?
No, it's
you did
me.
This
it's
last
me.
Week. It's not me.
Oh, for God's sake. Tara.
Okay. All right. So, close friend of the week this week has a very, very good subject title. The title is Did You Know They Made a Podcast? I'm going to say podcast like Lucy because I feel like this is. Yeah, okay. Podcast. And then the comment
podcast.
Is They did. Long-time listener, first-time reviewer. Firstly, hello. I'm one of the 5%. I honestly love this down-to-earth woke take on dating life. Or inspiring.
Oh my goodness. Thank you very much. And by 5%, I assume they mean 5% of males who listen to the pod, not 5% in some other way that we don't know about.
I guess 5% listening to the pod. And should I DM them your number, Sarah, or... Where do we stand with that?
Tara, at this stage, you can do whatever you want with my number. Yeah, great. This week's episode, we are going to be chatting about dilemmas. We raised some question boxes on our respective Instagrams asking you all for some problems or dilemmas that you've been struggling with. And we wanted to bring some, in inverted commas, wisdom to the table and start discussing those. Now, to do this, we've actually got a very special guest star with us, our very first guest on the Close Friends podcast. Now, quite a history to try and put across here. I'm actually running out of space on my notes trying to put down all of the achievements that this person has. Former professional international tennis player, including on the British Olympic team. Former investment banker, now managing director of a multinational clothing production firm. Also founder, casually, of an ethical outerwear brand. Has 3 degrees, including a PhD in progress in gender bias. And the hardest job of all, raising Tara. Welcome to Rena Margulies, Tara's mum. Hello, Rena.
Hey, Rena.
Hello.
It's Rena Iney, actually. But...
Rena Iney, as she's better known online. It's also important to highlight here, you know, you're also a Spurs supporter and Westie lover.
Thank you, Sarah.
Great. So we got the most important facts.
Yeah, we did.
No problem at all. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, actually, as you can see. Next to Tara.
It's lovely to see you together.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, don't they sound exactly the same?
Do we?
Yes. Lucy and I were like, yes. They both have such beautiful voices. Because we got your voice notes forwarded to us on the group chat, Rena. And you literally sound exactly the same. So there you go. That's a compliment for you
okay,
both.
Okay. Well, then the way for you listening at home, the way to differentiate between the two of us is if someone says fuck loads in their sentence, then that's me, Tara. And if someone's actually giving you some wisdom, then it's probably not me and it's mum.
That's
true. This is exciting.
Rena, first question that I know is at the front of everyone's minds. Have you been listening to the pod so far?
I have listened to every single pod.
Have you actually?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Start to finish, yes. Every single one. And the first one, I thought, oh God, this is, you know, what's this sort of thing? And then I was laughing all the way through it. Then I thought, I've got to listen second. And then I have to tell you what happened. The second pod, I go, oh Tara, like, is, you know, is the second pod out? And she goes, well, maybe you ought to skip this one. You know, you can listen to the one in the week after. And I'm like, bloody hell, am I going to listen to this right now? So I like went straight on and listened to that one. So yeah, I've listened to every single one. And it's just really funny because obviously, you know, I was just telling Tara, like, I know when she's getting angry, like even before, like, even when she's silent, I know that the sort of the anger is going to come through. And it's just really funny for me. No, it's been great. I love it. I haven't missed one yet.
Oh my God, I actually didn't know that. So lovely to hear. Thank you. And yeah, I'm sorry about the second episode. From all three of us, sincerely, we really do apologise.
Why? I thought it was your best, actually.
Well, my dad decided that was the episode. And that was the point where he would share it in my extended family WhatsApp chat to everyone. Bear in mind, he hadn't listen to it himself. He shared the podcast in the group and I had to like speak. I haven't seen my cousins in years. He's like sharing this podcast where I'm discussing orgasms and my sex life. I had to put a family-wide ban on it. I was like, this is not okay. None of you can listen to this now. So I'm very envious that you have this relationship.
We haven't discussed it. But anyway.
I'm allowed to make another anecdote about that podcast or not.
Okay, go on then.
Yes, of course. Shirley can do it as well.
Okay, Shirley. So, there's Shirley's involved. Tara would come home from school when she was very young, about 11, 12, 13, with a friend. And because I'd always said to Tara, I'm going to always tell you the truth. Like, if you don't know if something's true, you can ask me. So, you know, what happened was I would walk in after work and then these two would be sitting there and I could just tell from their faces. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to ask me something. And they did. I mean, and the stuff they would ask me, and obviously I had to tell them the truth, right? And then they would like be wetting themselves on the floor under the table for like 15 minutes afterwards. And this went on every day after school and after work. But yeah, I do remember that clearly.
You're asking about sex stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Were you?
No. And some of the stuff you talked about.
I remember, there was one time where I was 11 and I was like, so how did lesbians have sex? Was it that?
Yeah, well, you didn't say lesbians. You said, how do gay guys have sex?
Oh, gay guys.
Yeah.
Eased in then. Yeah, okay, cool. Worked up. Wow.
That was it. You come home from work, right? You walk into the kitchen. How do gay guys have sex?
Rena, you've been through like all the stuff that I've just listed, like all your life achievements. And by far the hardest one must have been coming back to Tara and a snaky mate being like, what's sex? Love it.
Okay, right. I'm going to crack on with some of the questions that we received from everyone on the gram. And the first one is around imposter syndrome. There were a lot of people that said, help, I don't know what to do about the fact that I don't feel like I'm worthy in a new job, or I'm scared that I'm not good enough. So the question is how to stop yourself from feeling like you are not worthy of the position, or it can be a relationship, it can be anything that you're in, and feeling like you're a bit of a fraud in whatever position you are in, and how to tackle that.
It's a tricky one, because this is down to kind of feeling like it's down to having low self-worth, essentially. And that has to be a practice that comes from within. But I would say one of the biggest things that I always try and remember, because you never nail this. This is never a thing where you're like, I'm fixed now and I feel like I belong in every single space. You're always going to have certain situations which make you doubt yourself. But it has to come down to knowing that no one really knows what they're doing genuinely. And inside, like, no one actually knows. And no one always, like, people don't really openly share that often enough. And I think that's why we have this perception of like, oh, they're doing this and they feel like that and they're super confident and, you know, they're really fulfilled. But ultimately, no one fucking knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's true of what I believe so far. I think I've also had imposter syndrome from the perspective of being a woman. And I bring this up with some hesitation because I know it's a whole can of worms. But for me in particular, being in a male-dominated industry as an engineer, I remember when I landed my first graduate job, I was told by one of my friends who also went in for the job, like quite a few of the people I was studying with went in for the same job. It was a competitive role. And one of my friends said to me, did you get it? And I was like, well, yeah, I did actually. And like, I'm chuffed and whatever. And he was like, well, we all know you only got it because you're a woman. And, you know, the fact that I never forgot that and I went into that role being like, he's probably right. You know, I'm sure there were quotas or things set up to make it easier for me to get in there. And really, I don't deserve to be here. There's people like him who are far smarter who do. It sets you up for your whole career, really, comments like that. So I've had it from that perspective of just being a woman and, you know, being in the workplace like that. But Rena, I'm really keen to get your thoughts on this as well.
Sarah, that makes me so angry. But obviously, I mean, I've heard that so often, and it's happened to me, obviously, as it's happened to, or if it hasn't happened to any of us, it will happen. Mm. And that just makes me so angry, because it's so wrong. It really is so wrong. I have a few sort of anecdotes, because I think the best way to maybe talk about this is with anecdotes. And so imposter syndrome, I think it's something that's very prevalent out there. So I think the first thing to say is that pretty much everyone has experienced it, or if they haven't, they will. You know, it's everyone. I do think also that it's a good case in point is we started a degree, all of us together. We're very few women. And I think that when we started, everyone had imposter syndrome, thinking, you know, I shouldn't be here. All these others are so much smarter than me. And It's just, you know, I haven't found the right place for me. I should be somewhere else. And then after you start talking to everyone else for a few minutes or a few days or a few hours, yeah. you know, then you suddenly think, oh my God, like, what are all these idiots doing here, actually? You know, I mean, no, seriously. And you get over it really fast. But the whole thing about putting certain people down or certain, you know, agenda down or whatever it may be, it could go further than that, is it's really bad. And people do that to make themselves feel mm-hmm. better.
Yes.
It's very, very
Absolutely.
Wrong.
I think off the back of that as well, a way that's really helped me with imposter syndrome that I've had before is to surround myself with people who hype me up, because it's very easy to find yourself in a circle of people, of friends, of colleagues or whatever that don't hype you up. And I'm now really lucky to be in a position where all of my friends are my biggest fans, and it's great, and I'm their biggest fans too, and it really helps with that, because, you know, you hear it so often you start to believe it, you know, and it's great. So that would be my 2 cents.
I was just going to say, you also have to remember that there are people looking at you who, what, from the outside would think, she knows exactly what she's doing.
Yes.
She is nailing it. She yes. is so confident. And you just remember, I think it was even like, when I had therapy last year, my therapist, she was like, everyone inside, she's like, she's quite eccentric. She's like, everyone inside is blancmange. Everyone inside is soft blancmange. And everyone has this hard coating, but inside everyone is blancmange. And I was like, okay. And I had to like think in my head, what is blancmange? Is that like a flan?
What's blancmange?
I think it's like a flan.
Fluffy stuff.
Wobbly. No.
Wobbly, fluffy.
I've never heard that word ever before.
I did have to think, what is blancmange? Because I felt like she was making a really profound point, which she was. And she said to me, you have to just think, people inside are blancmange. Whenever you're talking, even if you are having a conversation with the most confident seeming person who has their shit together on the outside, just have that critical thinking to know that inside they are blancmange or flan, whatever you want to pick. So yeah, I really like that.
In my experience, the people who are the most confident outwardly, the most hard and all the rest of it, the most I'm not an imposter, they're the ones who have I mean, for them it's the most difficult.
Those people are also, especially in corporate environments, those people are experts at playing the visibility game. And actually, you find that, like, in a lot of jobs, actually, I'd extend this to a lot of jobs where there's a hierarchical, you know, performance structure. When people are performing in a certain way, like, are they actually really good at their job, or are they really good at playing the system? And that's like, a lot of imposter syndrome can come from that as well. Like, let's say you are actually like really pretty good at the job you're doing, but you have all this other stuff to think about in terms of like visibility and politics and rising through the ranks and stuff. And you find that the people without imposter syndrome are actually really good at that. And whether they're actually good at the job underlying that, I don't even know. But a lot of it is about perception. And I think also comes down to insecurity of other people as well. I suppose it shows a level of emotional intelligence and self-awareness if you have got imposter syndrome, because at least you're questioning, you know, your own capabilities, and you're constantly keeping yourself in check, which is actually quite a nice quality to have, rather than just being like, yeah, I got this, I boss this all the time, and maybe getting complacent. But there's two sides to it, and I don't think necessarily the people who don't look like they've got imposter syndrome are actually the best at their jobs or the best at whatever they're doing.
Agree.
They're overcompensating.
Yeah.
Agree.
So the next question is, how do I stop molding myself into what the person I like wants me to be rather than the actual person that I am?
Oh, I like this one.
Oh, such a good one, because it's so easy to sit here on our pedestals and be like, oh yeah, you just gotta love yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't work like that. If you've met someone you think they're one in a million, of course you're gonna be like, yeah, I'm gonna put my best self forward, which I suppose is different to like completely molding your entire personality. But like, actually, yeah, I'd argue like a lot of dating in the early days is about showing your best side first before gently easing into the weirdness behind.
Or like, it's not necessarily your best side, but it's like showing the side you want them to see first.
Yeah, I don't know if that's healthy though, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not healthy. But like, when I started dating Hugo, who's not actually Hugo, like, I was such a bitch because I didn't want a relationship. So the facade that I put up was like, I don't want a relationship, I don't want anything, rah, rah. You know, obviously that worked really well, didn't it? But that was the facade that I put up. And like, God, I mean, he stuck with me, bless him, but like, it wasn't good. I don't know. It's the opposite problem. But anyway,
I think so. I definitely think of my last relationship. I look back now and I'm like, I am shocked that I was doing that, or like seemingly happy to do the things that we were doing. For example, sitting in a skate park outside for like 3 hours whilst he skateboards and I'm kind of sitting there. And you know, you think that these are, and at the time I'm like, oh no, this is like nice, you know, like he's doing his thing, I'm there. But then like when you break it down, when I'm me, whole me, by myself me, I'm like, I don't want to do that stuff. And I think there were loads of things which I would like put to one side thinking, oh, that's just him. That's just the way he is. That's great. I'm going to be more like this. I'm going to be accepting of this. And now I'm like, if I had the choice now, I would not be like that. And I wouldn't go to those things. And I wouldn't like hang around there. So I'm like, yeah. I definitely think I'm the kind of person that has a tendency to do that. But I feel my most strong, my most sexy, my most powerful when I am fully doing my thing. And I find that is really attractive. And I think that's really sexy when you have your own thing going on. And you have to try and remember that when you feel that pull of, oh, I'm going to try and mold into his life. I'm going to maybe start liking things that he likes. You have to remember that like losing yourself is never going to work in your favor. Never. Because you're going to become a version of yourself that isn't true to yourself. You're going to resent them. And you ultimately want to be doing the things you want to do. So you're not going to be happy. So you have to resist that pull. It's hard as someone who has a tendency to be like that, but you have to resist it.
Yeah. The elephant in the room as well is, why do you feel the need to mold? And it's, this is a bit savage, like feel free to check me on this one, but is it because they just don't like you enough to like you for the real you, and you feel the need to sort of adhere more to their preferences and what they're after to try and get them to like you enough? I don't know. That's probably where I've seen my situations in the past where I've ended up doing this. It's just because they, you know, it probably wasn't right. And although I thought they were amazing at the time, I really wanted them to like me. It was actually a case of I had to mold myself because I wasn't exactly what they were looking for. And that's, you know, that's okay. For someone else, I will be exactly what they're looking for. I hope. Stay tuned.
Does it go further than that, in that, like, you know, we as women, and this question was asked by a woman, are like told that we basically exist to like please men, so we just mold our entire lives and have done for like, you know, generations to just fit into the lives of others, whereas, you know, now I'm hoping in our little bubble of close friends and, you know, the people around us, and hopefully more and more people, we're realizing that that's not the case anymore, and that's not how we do it in the 21st century. So we're starting to break out of that and realize that, you know, like, actually, I'm going to say this again because I'm just going to keep saying this for like ever, but something that you said, Lucy, on one of our first podcasts is that you are a complete whole person, and the person that's going to come and enter your sphere to be in a relationship with you is a person that's not going to complete you or like be your other half. Yeah. It's someone that's going to fit into your life and enhance it. And that's it. So you've got to be you, 100% you, if you're going to have a happy forever relationship.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it works now, right? What do you think, Mum?
Well, I think I have a question. I mean, if you're not going to be your real self, is the person that you're with going to be their real selves? No. I mean, most likely not. Where do you end up? So it's really just not worth it.
Also, how do you know what they want? Like, you know, you're dating someone. How do you know
that you want to go to the skate park? Like, he wanted to have an audience at the skate park. I mean,
Lucy got a bucket hat on and was like, Avril Lavigne.
Oh my God, I actually did.
But also, maybe he was doing that to impress you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe he was doing that as like
maybe he hates being at the skate park.
Maybe he hates the skate park.
Let me say one thing. So I'm saying this looking back and I'm cringing, but at the time, I definitely was like, I am so breezy and I'm so cool and we're just like living in the moment like a couple of fucking teenagers, but he's 30 and I'm fucking late 20s. It's like I feel like there's more context to it than that. But I will say that this, I'm not giving advice coming from the position of someone who doesn't do this. I'm coming from the position of someone who does do it. And I'm also going to throw it out there. Maybe look at your attachment styles. It's something that I was reading, in fact, I ordered the other day, the book called Attached, and it talks about attachment styles. And I think if you can kind of understand, I'm not going to go into it in too much depth, but basically, if you can understand your attachment style, it can help you manage feelings of insecurity, feelings of just kind of, I think the kind of the thing of losing yourself, it can stop you from doing that and maintain your self-worth and just, you know, remember that you, like you said, Tara, you are a whole person. So that's another thing I would say. But yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard one.
Okay, next up, and this is, I think, one of the most beautifully phrased and just wonderful questions that, well, wonderful and difficult questions that anybody has asked. Stay in a secure life that doesn't excite you or risk everything for adventure.
Mate, obviously risk it all. There we go.
Fuck it all.
Okay, next. No, I'm joking. No, come on. This is actually really hard because it's not that simple, is it?
No, it's not. But I think we glamorize both, don't we? I feel like we glamorize security and we glamorize adventure.
Depends
and
the
grass is, well, this is it. The grass is always greener. So whatever you have, like, you know, I know people who are the adventurers and who are like, you know, on the other side of the world on their own doing their thing, you know, having a great time, but they will always glamorize that security. And it's kind of, you know, we touched on this almost pretty similar with the kind of freelance versus full-time job thing that we did in episode whatever. It's the grass is always greener. There are benefits to both. So I think I would go with your gut. Like, don't stay in a secure life if you're going to spend your whole entire secure life thinking, what if I could be adventuring? Because then you're not going to enjoy your secure life and the other way around too.
Do you think if you are asking the question, that is the answer? As in, if your life's purpose, which for some people it is, and I will make sure it's super clear, for some people, they don't want adventure. They're super happy living a very comfortable, secure life. And like, if that's you, that's great. But if that is genuinely you, I think maybe you wouldn't be having this kind of thought process, or at least it wouldn't, you might think about it, but it wouldn't be eating you up. So I don't know, if you're asking the question, I think life is too short, and go out there and do what you need to do.
I think, I mean, the reality is, it's almost like one can't exist without some of the other. And I think if you really boil it down to what anyone wants, it's probably an element of both, whether that's bringing in some level of financial security, but still being able to adventure, or, you know, job security, but, you know, in a job that you really love, or whatever it is. I think actually the ideal for a lot of people probably sits in between both. And one of the main things I think about at the moment in terms of my own future is this, like, this triangle. I think I talked about the triangle of job satisfaction before, where you've got like job satisfaction, you know, every day, am I enjoying it? Then you've got, on another corner, you've got, you know, greater purpose. Is it doing some good for me or for the world or for my career? And then on the other part of the triangle, you've got money. And it's like, it's so hard to find something that seems to have all three. But you want that. I want that adventure. I'm definitely on the adventure side of things. But I'm also like, I appreciate I can't have that without some stability in terms of finance or support structure or whatever it is. I don't know. I think it's actually a bit of both. But you're right, we glamorize both of them.
There was a question that kind of linked to this a little bit, where somebody said they'd been in a relationship since they were like 13 years old, and they're now in the position where they love their other half so much, but they do just want to, you know, they do just want to travel and explore and do their thing. And I've found that question, that really kind of pulled on my heartstrings, because I've been there. I've definitely been there, where you just kind of, and we glamorize both, you know, being single and being in a relationship. And when you're single, you can just go and do whatever you want, and it's great. And when you're in a relationship, you're really happy and you're comfortable and whatnot. And I almost, when I read that, I said in my head, like, you almost kind of need to put in like a relationship sabbatical. It's like, we're still together and we're happy and we're good and we're going to be fine. But I'm just going to go to Bermuda for 3 months and just like hang out over there and just do my thing. And then I'll see you in September.
Oh, but you can't, like, because then it gets complicated, because then it's like, okay, well, what if you met someone, or they met someone, you know? I think, again, it goes back to like feeling like you, it's like, do you feel like you need someone? Is that what it is? Because I think sometimes we can confuse love and feelings with like deep attachment of like really needing someone, because you don't know what life is without them. So it's kind of having that conversation of like, do I really love this person? Mm. Or is it just that I've been with them since I was 13 years old and I don't know how to be by myself?
Question for mother. You've been married for 30 years.
How? What? Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I just have a bit of wine, I think.
So, like, genuine question, how do you make that shit work?
Yeah.
I'd also like put on the end of this question, because certainly to me, as a relative outsider perspective, it looks like you've had both. You've had an incredibly exciting, adventurous time together, and, you know, you formed a really positive and stable life. It is possible, right? Tell us it's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't really sort of agree with this way of looking at life. You know, it's like either this or it's this, because, you know, it's never like that, because basically whatever you're doing, you'll want to do the other. That's human nature. So I don't think it's constructive at all to look at it like that. I think the idea is to find a partner where you can feel that you have the stability elements that you need, but you can also have some of your own time that you need, that they could trust you and be on your side enough that they would allow that and you would allow that to them. That's very important. So those things are important, but also that you feel that you've somehow, you know, you can do what you want to do. But, you know, within certain limitations, I guess, because if you say, right, I'm going off for 2 years to, you know, I don't know, some ashram forever, and you might never see me again, but hopefully I'll come back in 2 years. You know, this kind of stuff is difficult, especially when you've got two, you know, 3-year-olds or something, twins. So it's what I'm saying was within limits. And then if you both afford each other that, then you can have something that can work over the long term. And it's not an either or. It can't ever mm-hmm. be an either or. Mm-hmm. So life's too short. You know, would you have to? What kind of choice is that? I mean, how can you live your life like that? And especially if you think about one partner for the long term, you know, it's like either that partner or it's, you know, some fun. I mean, that's just, you can't live like that. You know, for the short term perhaps, but not going forward.
Yeah,
isn't it bad? As you're saying all of this, which is so great, I love all of it, as you were saying that, I was just thinking, isn't it depressing that we view being with someone long term as stable,
kind
of boring traps, but then we also spend all of our energy talking and trying to find someone and meet someone.
Oh, like, my God,
what
existential crisis happening right now on all screens. You know what? This is really interesting, right? So Sarah, I think you were saying, you know, you go to Bermuda or whatever, and you were like, yeah, what if you meet someone? Like, you could meet someone at the local pub. Yeah. Like, why is it that you know, you travel for 3 months and you know, if someone...
Supermarket. You know, there is a thing about people going shopping. Well, non-COVID times, like late at night, going shopping and just hanging out.
Do you not know this? It's a thing.
You know, the supermarkets are open 24/7. There are people who go there around 11, 12, and they kind of hang out and they wait for other people who come see this, and they
But what kind of people are we talking?
I don't know because I've not actually done it myself, but it's a thing.
My guy is not doing that. I refuse. My guy is not hanging out at fucking Asda.
I was about to say, Sarah, can you try that and let us know how it goes, please?
It might be Waitrose, Lucy. Come on.
Yeah, it could be Waitrose. Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Rena, I want to know, how did you know when you'd found the one? Do you believe in the one? Oh, this is awkward if Manny's listening.
Well, Gareth,
he's not,
you mean,
don't
Gareth
worry.
Bale.
He's not listening.
I don't know if, I doubt Gareth's listening. Do you think?
He's not listening. No, he's fine.
So, this is the kind of question that, it's not a question to ask, actually. It's not a good question. I'm not meaning that in a nasty way at all, but I mean, that's not the right question to ask. The thing is, we all make decisions at certain times because we feel they're the right decisions. And decisions are difficult because actually you don't even know if you're making them from your own sort of free will, or if, you know, there's been a sort of societal push, or there's been mm-hmm. a family mm-hmm. or whatever. So we've all got a lot of baggage. We've all been, you know, domesticated almost. We're all kind of sort of domestic animals really in our way. So it's very, very complicated. And I think to say to yourself, how do you know? You know, I don't think that's the right thing. I think what happens is you get to a stage when you want a certain life, and so you make certain decisions to have that life. And if things are fitting, you know, things are in place, it feels like the right thing. But I don't think that's the right thing to ask yourself, like, you know, is this the one? I mean, you just don't know. And people change. I think what people don't take mm-hmm. into account when they get together with anyone at the beginning is that you change. And you either change together in the right direction along with each other, or you change in a direction that you just go apart. And you've got no way of knowing that in the beginning. None yes. at all.
Love that answer. Oh,
love and I think all of this.
We get, but this, isn't this conversation just highlighting how much bullshit we get sold on? Like yeah, the fact it has bullshit. To be black or white. We have to have one or we have to have the other. Adventure and excitement or stability. Find the one or be lonely and single forever and society just fucking disposes of you. Where did we get all of this from?
No, that's patriarchy. Absolutely just don't start that on. Don't start me off, honestly. I mean, this podcast would go on for another 3 hours and I'd be like having a rant and Tara would be like putting some ice on my head. No, let's just, if this is all shit, just forget it all. You know, life is long. Remember, you lot will live for a very, very, very long time. A very long time.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing, though. Yeah, I mean,
it's brilliant, but just remember, you know, you're looking for the one, right? Okay, great, I found the one. You know, 80 years later, you have to be sure that that's the one still, right? Because, you know, that's how long you've got to be
thinking. It's almost like, when you put it that way, why on earth are we trying to search for someone so young? Like, I would be...
Don't. Don't.
Why are we doing this?
Don't.
Lucy, is this resonating with you? Come on, the conversations we've been having recently, is this resonating with you?
100%. 100%. Good. And do you know what it is? As I'm sitting here, I'm like, where is this coming from? It's other women, like my friends. But the thing is, it's like me and my friends, but all of us are saying, oh, fuck this. No, we don't have to worry. But we're still talking about it. It's still a topic of conversation. So on the one hand, I'm having these conversations with you guys and my friends where it's like, oh, this stuff doesn't matter. You don't have to meet someone. Don't worry about that. You know, but on the other hand, we're still talking about it, which I think is mm-hmm. where I have this like mind fuck, because I'm talking about it. But the reason I'm talking about it is obviously because it feels like it's an important thing.
I think there needs to be a difference, though, between, like, you know, obviously dating and like hooking up and meeting people is fun, right? Like, I don't feel like we should be just like sacking that completely. But it's like,
but it's different.
It's the fact that we all kind of date to meet someone, to like, you know, settle down and whatnot. Like, yeah, we do for some reason. Men for some reason don't. And there's loads of questions in there that said, hey, you know, I feel really unworthy because every guy I meet just wants to fuck me and not actually date me. It's like, well, you know, why can't we also adopt that mentality? And I had, sorry, very quickly before you go, I had someone say to me on a DM, because I said this in my story or something, and I was like, you know, we also as women can just date to fuck around and have a good time, right? We don't have to be like, you know, looking for the one. And this girl said, yeah, but, you know, don't you think that as women we form attachments quicker? And I also think that's a massive generalization that for some reason is in our heads for no apparent reason. I don't know whether you agree.
The stats. Sarah, don't you have some stats here? But I'll just go in on the stats here, okay?
I'll do some research in the background.
That is absolutely not true. It's a perception. We are taught to think like that. It's absolutely not true. Statistically.
Hashtag stats. Rena.
Yeah, I can't give you the website, which you just reel off generally, Sarah, because I haven't prepared it, but it exists. It's out there.
Okay. You know what it is? It's the pressure, but also it's ego. As in, like, you just want someone to want you. You just want them to want you. That's it. Like, everyone has been in that situation where you've been seeing someone, you're not bothered about them at all, but the moment they turn around, it's like, oh, actually, I think I'm done now. And you're like, sorry? This person that I didn't even want has turned around and said they don't want me. Now I want them, and now I'm upset.
Fuming.
All of your ego. It's your ego. Mate,
the number of times that Shirley has gone crawling back to someone she didn't even like just because they decided they couldn't take her shit anymore. And she was like, hang on, you don't get to end this.
I had this thing with a guy I was seeing, and basically we'd broken up, I was moving on, he was moving on, things were really amicable, and then he messages me like a few months after, like one evening, and basically says that he's still in love with me, and that just pulled me back in. Like, I was just like, oh my god, okay, well, you know, I think I love him too, and we're gonna get back together. And we like had some communication over like the following few weeks after that, and then he like one day just turned around and was like, oh, like, I can't, I'm with someone. I was like, oh, okay. And like, you know, the whole situation, like, I mean, obviously can't go into too much detail, but the whole situation was like really messed up. I was messed up for like months. It was really hard. And I think like, obviously I can't put all the blame on this guy because, you know, it was me kind of like encouraging as well. But like, I feel like I wouldn't have felt those. I think I would have just been continuing on to date people and feel completely happy and completely secure if he hadn't have messaged me that one time. I genuinely think I would have been fine. So yeah, that was really, really shit.
You were worth so much more than that. Like, you are worth so much more than that.
Oh my God, I need this conversation.
It just hurts me to even hear that. That is such a load of, you know, absolute crap, okay? Like, I really, honestly, it just really hurts me to hear that.
I'm going to hug her for you.
Thank
you. Oh,
yes. Oh, Rina, I really need this conversation. I genuinely am. This is just so powerful shit. It's powerful shit.
Also, like, Lucy, when you listen to that, like, you must listen to yourself in that and be like, I can't believe. Like, listen, if I was telling you that story, you'd be like, for fuck's sake, Sarah, like, never, why would that even affect you? But it's so hard when you're in there. So hard when you were immersed in that situation. The paper I found, this UCL paper, was examining the differences in relationship satisfaction between genders. And actually, the anxious attachment style was a stronger predictor of relationship satisfaction in men than in women, which... can be interpreted in different ways. When I've read the paper fully, we could, you know, analyse that. But you wouldn't really associate the anxious attachment style with men at all, I would have said from that. I would have thought it was something that existed exclusively in women for a variety of reasons, you know, partly society being
gender
like...
Gender bias, isn't it?
You must find someone, you must do this, you must get pregnant before the age of XYZ, and you must... And then, you know, that shit makes you anxious. So rightfully so, when you go into these dates, you're thinking, could this be the one? Because if I don't find the one soon, society's going to cast me aside.
All right, listen, everybody out here, okay? Everyone who's listening to this, the 95%, this is for you. Men who are married, right, they live longer and much happier lives. Okay, this is the stats. The stats, you can find these stats, Sarah, while we're talking. Women who are married, well, you know what I'm going to say right here.
Say it. Okay? You say it.
No, they tend to be less happy and live less than women who aren't married. They were happier. So basically, guys have, you know, any man in his 20s or 30s should be looking for a wife because they know that they're going to be better off in their lives, happier, and live longer, okay? You lot, on the other hand, you know. Now, don't ever forget that, right, Lucy? Don't ever forget that, okay? Sarah?
Yeah.
Tara already knows this.
Yeah, I already know
okay,
that.
Okay, so don't forget. So think about that every time. You know, we're always told the opposite. We're always told that it's, you know, we are the ones, you know, the women, we have to do this because we have to have children by a certain age. We have to be like this and we have to have that and we have to have all this. You know what? Actually, the complete opposite is the actual reality and the truth. So the pressure is on them. They are the ones who need it more than we do. So take your time. Chill. Enjoy.
I mean, this is just fucking love this is it. Brilliant. We stan. But this makes complete sense because the demographic who need it the most are obviously going to sell it as the opposite way around so that they benefit from it. But I've just looked this up and it was an LSE professor who concluded, of course, one of Rena's many degrees from LSE, concluded that unmarried and childless women are the happiest subgroup in the population. This is a shit we're not being told.
Say it louder for the girls in the back.
Yet that happy subgroup are being plagued with insecurity and fear of not finding someone in the next 3 to 6 months to try and settle down with and hit all the other random goals we've got that don't even make you happy anyway. What the fuck?
And if I may, LSE are world leaders in happiness. No, I mean, honestly, economic research for happiness. They really are. So anyway, just wanted to put that out there. You know, it's not any kind of rubbish research. It's true.
This is incredible stuff. I honestly, I feel like I've learned so much from this conversation.
Same.
Today.
Do you know what? I needed this exact conversation today. Today, this week and today. I can't tell you. Because what's really funny is whenever I have things I'm kind of working through, I go to you guys, Tara and Sarah, And Tara's advice obviously is kind of filtering through from you, Rina. And it's so great. Also now getting a bit of it from the source, you know? Just a little bit from the source.
It's better, isn't it? I mean, it's really, it's more refined. It's more, yeah.
Oh my God, Stan just fucking hit me again.
He's really Stan amazing. Needs to be banned from our podcast episodes, I think, Sue.
Stan feeds off negative energy. Have you noticed this? He is most restless when you're most restless, Lucy.
Isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I think he just wants attention on the pod.
Do we all just, is that what we want though, as women? Attention, do you think?
So yeah, I want attention, but I don't care if it's from men or women. I just want attention.
I want it from very specific people. Very specific people, I want it.
No, I want the occasional cuddle. I don't feel like I need attention. I need recognition, I think. Like, I'd be really upset if, like, I did something and I was happy with it and nobody recognised that I did that. I don't necessarily think that's, like, I've never thought about this.
The word attention has such negative connotations with it. It's like attention seeker, yeah, little diva. Yeah.
No, I know. We'll leave the word aside, but the point is, do we, as human beings, I mean, I'm not genderizing this, how important to us is attention, and how much can someone like sort of, how important could someone become to us by just paying that little bit more attention maybe than other people do? It's something to think about and to be a bit careful about, because I think we're all so susceptible to it. Because we don't want to admit it, but attention is a big thing.
Yeah, and the grey area between what is attention and what is manipulation becomes very, very interesting. And I think like attention has to be broken down into a selection of other things, which is like interaction, which every human needs. Well, I mean, I'm generalising there, but most humans thrive off interaction with other humans.
You do. You need it. You need it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then there's validation, which is getting onto that slightly more perhaps negative side of attention. And then there's, attention seeking. And yeah, I guess that comes from validation as well. But I don't know.
Okay, so closing question is, when your other half doesn't want kids, but you do, how do you go about having that conversation?
I think it's very important when you meet someone and when you have a relationship with someone to talk about lots of stuff. So money's one thing, and I know what my background's in finance, so I'm a money person, but really, honestly, if you look at the stats about how many relationships break down because of money reasons, it's massive, okay? It's like the major reason. And kids, money and kids go hand in hand, because kids cost you a bloody fortune. I mean, look at Tara, for instance. I mean, if I would tell you, I have done the maths, okay? I'm not going to say it on this podcast because it's kind of embarrassing, but...
If you love me.
Kids, yeah, exactly, but you can't put a price on love, can you?
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. But honestly, they are a massive, massive, massive drain on funds. So you have to really want them. And also you have to be in a position to feel comfortable to have them in a relationship and as well as financially. So please, 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 early when you're in a serious relationship with someone, please talk about money. Please talk about bank accounts. Please talk about how you see a future together, how that's going to work. When do you want children? How many? And when and how? If someone was going to be relocated for work, how would that work? Would you be happy to leave? Would you sacrifice your career for that person's if they're earning more? Talk about all these things in advance, because they wreck relationships. And it's stupid to leave it till it wrecks the relationship. Talk about it.
I hate that I'm going to bring Sheldon Cooper into this, but relationship agreement in the Big Bang Theory, I don't know, and probably no one will get this. Come on, guys. Come on. So in the Big Bang Theory, Sheldon Cooper has a relationship agreement with the girl that he's with, and he basically just has all these papers of stuff in the relationship. And like, obviously you don't go that far, but I do see a little bit of worth in that. I mean, relationships are bloody hard, and they're even harder if there's stuff that you haven't talked about and open communication is everything,
stuff,
right?
Vital stuff.
But there's definitely one of the main reasons why I think certainly for women it's hard to be forthcoming about those things is because you're told it'll scare people off, and you're seen as being overly keen or just too forward. You're constantly caught in this whole I should be cool, I should be laid back and whatever. We've talked about this a lot on the pod. Can you just confirm that that's not real? And actually, if someone liked you enough and if it was right enough, then...
Yeah, I confirm, it's not real. It's all societal shit. You know what? If you are close to someone and you can't talk about that, then that's a red flag, okay? There's
yes.
a few red flags. If they're yes. Arsenal supporters, it's definitely a red flag, okay? But that is also a red flag. Just, you know, just don't go there, you know?
It is.
Really?
That is so spot on. I needed to hear that. I needed to hear that.
Amazing. Closing remarks. I absolutely bloody loved that.
What, the Arsenal supporter bit?
Everything about everything about it. I mean, yeah, Arsenal supporters suck and can get lost if you're any of you listening to this.
Well, there goes our 5%.
Never mind. Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's now like 1%.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Rena, for being our first ever guest. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you, and we hope you'll come back again and share much more wisdom, because yes. clearly you're so much better at this than we are, and we've learned so much today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much to all of you for listening in. Remember, you can like and subscribe to us or follow, depending on what platform you're on. Please do leave us a 5-star review if you think we're worth 5 stars, which of course we are. And don't forget to reach out to us on the podcast if you want to talk about anything we've spoken about today. closefriendsthepodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us directly on Instagram @movewithtara, @lucymountain, @cultthread.
Rena's sustainable, I can't believe I'm calling you Rena, follow mum's sustainable fashion brand @cultthread, CULTHREAD.
And you know, just to round that off, you can also still follow me, everyone, @sarahb.london. don't sweat it though. Thanks so much to everyone listening in. It's been a pleasure having you. It's bye from us. Goodbye.
Bye.